Hey, I'd like to welcome you to another episode of Mission Matters. My name is Adam Torres, and if you'd like to apply to be a guest on the show, just head on over to missionmatters.com and click on Be Our Guest to Apply. All right, so today I have Jason Greer on the line, and he's founder of Greer Consulting, Inc., and we are going to talk about diversity training, and also why it's important for companies to think about this. First off, Jason, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
All right, Jason. So again, excited to get into today's topic and really to see how your firm is making a difference and also, you know, some of the response and feedback that you've gotten from your work in the training arena. I know you've gotten quite a bit of traction and I know that's for a reason, no doubt. So excited to go into that. But before we do, we'll start this episode the way that we start them all with our Mission Matters Minute. So, Jason, we at Mission Matters amplify stories for entrepreneurs, executives, and experts. That's our mission. Jason, what mission matters to you?
Just really getting the message out there that, you know, at the core of our philosophy for Greer Consulting, Inc., also called GCI, is that people work for money, but they'll die for respect and they'll die for recognition. But helping executives understand that how you want to be respected might be light years different than how the people who work for you want to be respected. Just on the same time, how you want to be recognized might be completely different than how they want to be recognized. And it's our goal to make sure that we're bridging that gap between companies and the people who really drive the company's bottom line, which are the employees.
That's awesome, Jason. I love bringing mission-based individuals on the line to share why they do what they do, like what excites them and gets them into the marketplace to make a difference. So great having you on. And I think just to start off this interview, maybe let's go a little bit further back into your career. I mean, like, how did you get on this path to really helping companies with diversity training?
That's a great question. So I'm a former board agent with the National Labor Relations Board, and that's where I really got my firm understanding of sort of the legalities that are surrounding companies that are non-union versus unions that were seeking to represent them. So eventually became a labor relations consultant, founded my company in 2005. And what I started to see, you know, as we were pulled into these situations in which employees were considering unionizing or there were complete breakdowns from an employee relations standpoint between managers and employees, what I started to notice from, say, 2005 to maybe around 2011 was a gradual changing of workplace dynamics, not just in terms of, you know, the social drivers such as race, gender, and other things of that nature, but also what employees were seeking versus what employees had sought in the past. Now we're starting to hear more employees talking in terms of wanting more of a work-life balance. We were starting to see more employees of color who were actively taking steps toward talking to their organizations about what it means to be an employee of color for their specific organization and how they were seeking opportunities to grow within the organization. But it was often difficult for them to imagine that growth because they didn't see executives that looked like them, that were not necessarily representative not only of the employee base, but also the customer base that they service. So really, this came as a result of a direct need that you can talk to managers all day long about what it means to respect and recognize and listen and, you know, all of the soft skills that are critically important to being a manager. But there was that other component of, look, if the only people that you ever deal with are people who look just like you in your personal life, and then you come into your professional life and you have no frame of reference for dealing with people from a diverse background, then that's an issue. So really, that's where our diversity training started to come about, was more from fitting a need, because we would have these companies that would contact us and say, listen, we heard that you all are awesome what you do, and I'm proud to say that my company, we're in the top 5% of labor and employee relations consultants in the country, which I'm very proud of. These companies were contacting us saying, look, we've heard about your training. We know how great your consultants are. We know about the wonderful work that you do, but do you offer diversity training? And we're not just talking about diversity training for the perspective of come in, make us feel guilty because we're white, right? And then you leave and we have to pick up the pieces. It was more of, do you do a diversity training that helps us to understand how we as executives, many of whom happen to be white, can fit into this overall fabric of diversity in such a way that we're not necessarily seen as the problem, but we can be part of the solution. And that's really where that came about.
That's great. It's a great story and so needed. And you've been in this business, I mean, for a long time, just to put that out there for the audience. This isn't something that, you know, because now it's a trend, right? But when I look at how long you've been in this, I mean, I believe over like 17 years or something. Am I right on that?
Yes, sir. Absolutely.
So when you think about like when you started this, I'm kind of blown away because you were so far ahead of the curve on this. Now it's when I say trendy, I mean, at least it's getting news coverage. We have a big way to go, obviously, but at least it's getting news coverage now and people are talking about it, right? Like what kind of, like what's interesting to you in the space just in general? Cause you have a really unique vantage point. Like what's interesting in the space that you're seeing overall for diversity training and adoption, of these types of programs, by employers?
Yeah. Wonderful question, Adam. I will tell you that I would agree with you that it's actually very trendy. You know, when we talk about the George Floyd moment, which you want to talk about capturing lightning in a bottle. I mean, just imagine, for the most part, everyone's at home because of the COVID quarantine, right? And you've had all of these, and there's a reason why I'm sharing this. You've had videos on police officers killing Black people is nothing new. It just so happened that this George Floyd moment happened when everyone was at home. And for the most part, everyone's feeling a degree of powerlessness, right? Mm-hmm. Because we have no idea what this virus is going to do to us. People aren't able to go to work. You're scared to go outside. You're scared to go to the grocery store. It was one of those. And when I talk about catching lightning in a bottle, and my heart goes out to George Floyd, I've cried, both my wife and I have cried many a tears as a result of what happened to him, especially the pain that his family has felt. It was one of those rare moments when you consider what a minority is, right? And we're going to talk about from a sociological standpoint. The very definition of a minority is anyone who is socially, politically, and economically disenfranchised. That's a minority, right? That generally does not fit when you talk about white America in terms of the majority, right? Yet in that moment, when we're all at home, we all kind of felt like what it was to be a minority because I don't have any power and that, you know, there are forces above me who are dictating how my life is going to be. The reason why I bring that up is because now you have a degree of empathy for what George Floyd went through in that moment and everybody's watching that, right? So what did we see? We saw companies and organizations who are putting out these, you know, mission statements on Black Lives Matter, these, you know, mission statements on prizing diversity. You watch just the gradual browning of corporate websites, right? Where all of a sudden it was like, okay, let me go to, you know, photoshop.com or whatever it is, where you can get, you know, free photos and let me find folks who I could put on my website to say that I prize diversity. So diversity did become trendy because that's what people were talking about. Now, what I'm going to tell you is interesting to me is how we're talking about diversity, but we're not talking about diversity. And here's where I'm talking about the distinction. How we look at diversity in terms of a company is that it's not enough to talk about those social drivers. It's not enough to talk about race, gender, you know, the things that you can see that pass the eyeball test. Because diversity in itself is so much deeper. In order for me to get you, Adams, to understand my perspective, we have to find a point of commonality. The point of commonality that we all have is our brain. So when we talk about diversity, we talk about diversity more in terms of what is the story that's going on in your brain as it relates to the outside world. Because you consider that the brain in itself is the only, for as powerful as the brain is, it has yet to evolve. Your brain still thinks that we're walking around in the days of our ancestors. Where we're hanging out with people, you know, our ancestors are hanging out with people who look like us, talk like us, thought like us, therefore they're us. It's what you call your in-group. And when you're in the presence of your in-group, that dopamine effect goes through your body and you feel good. Contrast that with when you deal with somebody who doesn't look like you, doesn't talk like you, doesn't think like you, that's what you call your out-group. When you're in the presence of your out-group, the cortisol effect kicks in. The cortisol effect is a stress hormone, and your brain is reduced to the point where it can't think because it only has one or two options. Either we fight the out-group or we flee from the out-group. until you were able to get people to recognize that there, that the vast distinction between the in-group and the out-group are the stories that are consistently being told about one another, you're never going to get to the point where you can truly prize diversity. So you have these organizations that are talking about unconscious bias. Unconscious bias training this, unconscious bias training that. And it just, it hurts my heart. It breaks my heart. Because how can I tell you about unconscious bias when the brain is never offline? There's no such thing as unconscious bias. The reason why I say there's no such thing as unconscious bias, and I would change that term to non-conscious bias, is because the brain is on 24/7, 365 days a year. The brain is a bias-driven machine. So if you knock me unconscious, I'm offline. But the brain is never offline. So I can't talk to you about your unconscious bias, because unconscious bias by itself means that you're just not aware because you're offline. But if we're talking about your non-conscious bias, it's the reason I'm 6'3", 275 pounds, African-American man, been big my entire life. And it has been my experience that when I would walk past women who, you know, for the most part happen to be white women, they do this thing which I call the clutch. The clutch is I walk past them and they clutch their purses. Now, it would be very easy for me to say, well, she's just racist. But Adam, I can't tell you the number of times that I've encountered people who have absolutely no idea why they're doing what they're doing. And more importantly, they have no idea that they did it. So it's not enough for me to say that she's racist because she's clutching her purse. There might be a story that's going on in her brain that's saying that somebody might have nothing to do with the fact that I'm black. It might have the fact to do with that. I'm 6'3", 275 pounds, and I'm physically bigger than her. There are these stories that are going on in our brain, and until we start to understand those stories, we're never going to get to the point where we truly understand diversity. And that's why I, you know, the trend of diversity training, which is awesome, it's not enough to say that I've conquered, or we as an organization have conquered, diversity with a two-hour training, because it's so much deeper. Because those stories that are going on in your brain are going to take a lifetime to understand how you show up.
It's awesome. And switching gears slightly here. So, and some of the things that you mentioned, I'm sure are in here, and I want to make sure that we work this into the conversation. So you also wrote a book about this. So Bias, Racism, and the Brain, how we got here and what needs to happen. What was the inspiration for the book and taking this knowledge and putting it in book form?
Great question. The George Floyd moment. It just so happened that when that moment happened, and I'm going to sort of speak across the board because I heard this from a number of African-American friends and associates and going down the line, that we were one of millions of people who, when the George Floyd moment happened, so many of our white friends and our non-black friends were contacting us, asking what could they do to engage in a conversation around how we can become more of a colorblind society, or people expressing just complete shock that something like this happened. When I say something like this, I'm talking about former officer Derek Chauvin assassinating George Floyd. And I was left with this question of what can I do, because I have all of this knowledge, I have all these things that I've done, but what can I do to advance the conversation? And so I remember, I'll never forget contacting my co-author, Phil Dixon, who is one of my closest friends, and he also happens to be one of the foremost authorities on the neuroscience of leadership, basically brain-based leadership. And I said, Phil, I'm going to throw out a wild idea, and you tell me if it's plausible. And what if we took my experiences, the experiences that I've had as it relates to race and racism in America, and we blended that with what we know about the brain? Because it's one thing to read about my experiences, but it's another thing to, you know, take people who are not necessarily, who've not necessarily gone through that, but to take people through the story in such a way that it also applies to their life. Because you might not know, look, I was a victim of cross burnings when I was 17 years old. And we were talking 1991, the Knights of Ku Klux Klan, also known as KKK, burned crosses in protest of my family. I was age 18 when a group of white men threw a bottle of urine, and I only know it was urine because it got in my mouth, at me and basically told me to go back to Africa, right? I was a freshman in college, home for spring break, going through this. So you might not necessarily have gone through those extremes, but we all know what it's like to feel ignored at some point. We all know what it's like to feel a bit disenfranchised at some point. We all know what it's like to have your heart broken at some point. So what we did was we started with this simple concept, and I say simple, but that's kind of how it felt. The simple concept of how do we advance this conversation, but advance this conversation in a way that people can wrap their arms around it. And we ended up writing Biased Racism in the Brain, and we really hoped to be able to pass this out to a couple of clients, maybe pass it out to a couple of church groups or anybody who might be interested in having that conversation. And I'm shocked and amazed and highly blessed that the book ended up being a number one Amazon bestseller and is now an international bestselling book. So that's really how it came. The book came as a result of what can we do to further this conversation, but to further this conversation in a way that we're not pushing people away, but we're bringing people into the conversation.
That's great. And I understand that you're also a podcaster. Is this right? I love bringing podcasters on the line.
I am.
Not going to let you get out of here without that. Come on, man. Tell us about the podcast. Can't let you do that.
No worries, man. So one of the things that I'm known for in the industry, my nickname is the Employee Whisperer. And I wish that I can say that I created that, but I didn't. I just one day got a call from a company saying we're looking for the Employee Whisperer. I thought they were making fun of me, and I just found out that people within the industry, that's what they refer to me as, and they just never told me that that's what they called me. And really that comes from my ability to, you can put me in any situation, and my consultants as well, but you can put me in any situation with any demographic of, you know, employee base, and I'm going to understand where they're coming from. And the secret behind understanding where they're coming from is I just take the time to listen intentionally. And then taking that back and sort of translating that to the executives from the perspective of it's not enough to give people money, but you've got to give them your time. You've got to give them your attention. So what the Employee Whisperer podcast is really a outgrowth of that is taking people through, you know, what it's like for me as a consultant. What am I seeing in terms of workplace trends? And we hit news and noteworthy on iTunes, I want to say maybe about a month ago. So it's been a great ride, man.
Fantastic. Well, Jason, I can talk to you all day about this. I mean, it's just been great to connect with you, to connect with your brand. And I love helping people promote books, especially when they're great books that need to be read and that need to get out there. So that
Thank
being
you.
Said, I'm going to make sure to put all the links and all that good stuff to the book, to everything else in the show notes, and make sure that I'd love for my audience to go over there and pick up a copy of, first off, Biased Racism and the Brain, how we got here and what needs to happen. So definitely for the audience, go pick up a copy of that. But if somebody's listening to this and they want to connect with you and talk more about your consulting and just follow your journey in general, I mean, what's the best way for people to do that?
Oh, wonderful question. You can go to my website, hiregci.com. I'm very, very good on getting back to people within 24 hours. Luckily, we get hit by a number of requests, so just bear with me. You can follow me on Twitter. I'm not that big of a tweeter, but I do enough, at Labor Diversity, and definitely on Instagram, jason.greer. I'm proud we're over 10,000 followers at this point. We just started Instagram. I just started my Instagram account, I want to say, maybe about a year ago, so it's been tremendous growth relative to where we were before. As well as on LinkedIn, you can find me, Jason Greer. Contact me. I love talking to folks. And I won't try to upsell you on anything. I just love the conversation.
Fantastic. Well, Jason, again, awesome having you on the show. And to the audience, as always, appreciate you tuning in. If this is your first time tuning into a Mission Matters episode, just to let you know, we're a platform that's all about bringing on entrepreneurs, executives, and experts and having them share their mission, why they do what they do, like what gets them fired up to go out there and to make a difference. If that's the type of content that sounds interesting to you or engaging or something you like to participate in, definitely hit the subscribe button. We invite you to do that because we have many more mission-based individuals coming up on the line, and we don't want you to miss any of that. And Jason, really, it has been a pleasure. Thanks again for coming on the show.
Hey, thanks for having me, Adam. You have an awesome show, wonderful host. So thank you.